Good morning. Our scripture reading comes from the book of Colossians, chapter 3, verse 17. Colossians 3, 17. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him.
Good morning. It's good to be with you and to be able to gather together for worship this morning. We do have some visiting with us. We're glad that you're here and grateful that you've made effort to come and worship God together with us. And we are encouraged by that and hope that we can in turn be an encouragement to you as we seek to serve the Lord. In all that we do, as we just read a moment ago, our desire is to do all in the name of the Lord, that is by his authority and respecting and honoring him in all things. And that is what we want to do each day. We've actually done a series of lessons where they've kind of been a little bit more sporadic of late, but we've been doing a series of lessons on that principle of making sure that all that we do is in accordance with the will of God. Looked at several principles that we need to apply in making sure that our life is right in the sight of God, that we're doing what is in accordance with the will of God. And I want to spend some time this morning making some application of those principles so that whatever we do, whether it's what we say or what we're actually doing, is in accordance with the will of God. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the occasion in Genesis where Lot pitches his tent toward Sodom and the great catastrophe that results. And saw that there was nothing in that decision that was neutral. There's no decision that we're going to make that is a morally neutral decision. It's either going to lead us closer to God and help us to be faithful to God, or it's going to lead us in the direction of the devil, the dragon. And so we're going one of two directions in our lives. And there are no areas of our life that are not touched by God's influence, or there should not be any area of our life that is not touched by God's influence. And so, if we flip over for just a moment to Numbers chapter 15 and verse 38, Numbers chapter 15 and verse 38, we find an instruction here. God says to speak to the sons of Israel and tell them that they shall make for themselves tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and that they shall put on the tassel of each corner a cord of blue. And so that kind of seems like a little bit of a random insertion there, but every garment that they wear is to have this blue cord sewn onto that garment. And we might sit there and scratch our heads and wonder, what in the world is God trying to do in that? And I think one thing that may not be the point, but I think one point that we can make from that is, they could not get dressed in the morning without a reminder of God. If you look at the next verse, it shall be verse 39, a tassel for you to look at and remember all the commandments of Yahweh, and so as to do them and not follow after your own heart or after your own eyes, after which you played the harlot, so that you may remember to do all my commandments and be holy to your God. The purpose there was that they could not get dressed in the morning without a reminder of God and the commandments of God that is supposed to guide them as they go throughout the day. And I want to suggest that there's not anything that we're doing today that is outside of the influence of God, and that includes as we walk into our closet to get ourselves dressed each morning. And so I want to think about how we can apply some of those principles of respecting the authority that God has given and use them to help us to understand what God says as far as placing coverings upon ourselves. Now, I want to say before we begin here, I'm not trying to single any one thing out that I've seen here. I think there's a very good understanding of this from what I've seen around here. And so I'm not trying to pinpoint anything, any one thing in particular, but I do want to suggest, I've been places where these kinds of things are not understood. Churches where these things are not understood. And it is shameful what you see when people gather together to worship. And we might think, well, we're not seeing some of those things here. Well, if we don't talk about them, then we will.
And so we need to be reminding ourselves of these principles and teaching others these principles so that we know what God expects of us in as we clothe ourselves so that we can honor Him in all things, including in the ways that we dress. And I want to note as well, before we begin, some of the principles that we're going to be talking about today are not exclusive to women. If you go online and you type in this subject onto the internet or a search engine, what you're going to find is article after article after article that deals with women and the way that they need to clothe themselves. And I think that is an utter shame, because men need to remember that these principles apply to them too. And it's not exclusively the women that need to cover themselves properly. We all do, if we're going to honor God, if we're going to be holy in the way that we dress. And so I want to think about these principles and apply them to all of us. And we're going to make some applications to the guys here too. So we're not just picking on the ladies. And I hope to show that we can honor God in the way that we dress when we follow His instructions. So we're going to begin by going to 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and beginning in verse 9. This is one of a couple passages that we find in the New Testament that deal with the way that we are to adorn ourselves. And again, these passages are directed more toward the women in this, but I think, again, the principles can apply both ways. Beginning in verse 9 of 1 Timothy chapter 2, it says, "Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, with modesty and self-restraint, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women professing godliness." So as we adorn ourselves, as we clothe ourselves, one of the things we need to remember is that we are professing godliness, and we need to dress ourselves in a way that is enabling us to profess godliness. And so he suggests ways that what we wear should be proper clothing, or some of your versions will say modest clothing there. It's the idea of respectable or appropriate dress. And that's going to differ on the occasion. If you're home by yourself, that's going to be a different level of appropriateness than if you're among people. But we want to make sure that we're covering ourselves appropriately. Second, my version says that we should cover ourselves with proper clothing with modesty. I believe the King James says that with modest clothing, with shamefacedness. And that idea of shamefacedness is there's a sense of shame that is associated with our nakedness. We're going to talk about that in a little bit here. But there is a sense of shame that should be under consideration as we are dressing ourselves. And the reality is our clothing is communicating something. We've talked already, Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 10, which describes the attire of a harlot. Nobody wants to be communicating that, at least nobody here, right? We don't want to be communicating that lesson, but there are some ways that Christians have dressed that do fall into that category. We can talk about that in a moment. But we don't want to be sending that message. The message we want to be sending is that we are dressed in a manner that professes godliness, that we are children of the King, that we are honorable, that we are faithful to the Lord. And so Peter instructs, Paul discusses in terms of the way that we ought to adorn ourselves with modest apparel. 1 Peter 3, verses 3 through 5 is another place where we find instructions in this manner, where Peter here says, "Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair, the wearing of gold jewelry, and putting on garments, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible quality of a lowly and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God." And so Peter writes to show that our adornment is not merely supposed to be external. That doesn't mean there's no consideration for the external. But rather, we must have an outward adornment that expresses an inward quality that is faithful to God. And the quality that it should be displayed or expressed through the way that we adorn ourselves is a gentle and a quiet spirit. And as we start to make applications of these principles, and some of the principles we're going to talk about in a minute, I want to make sure that we remember that idea of a gentle and quiet spirit. That is what we're trying to communicate. And if we're trying to draw undue attention to ourselves, that is not a gentle and quiet spirit that is precious in the sight of God. And so that's the spirit that must be guarding us or governing us as we clothe ourselves. Now, before we move on, there are a couple of arguments that people make based upon these texts that I want to deal with before we get into other areas of our discussion this morning. First of all, the claim is that modesty has to do with dressing too much. As we see here in 1 Peter 3, it's the braiding of the hair, the wearing gold jewelry, the putting on of garments. It's extravagance. That's what Peter has in mind, or and Paul as well, when he's talking about clothing ourselves. And there's a sense in which that is true. I think part of the discussion here is dressing in a way that's not flashy, as we might say, ostentatious, that we're trying to draw attention to ourselves. I think sometimes this can happen when you have that big old buckle, belt buckle on there, and then you fashion your clothes to where that's front and center, and you're trying to show off your big old belt buckle. That doesn't always mean that you're being ostentatious, but sometimes we're drawing attention to certain things. Or if we have very high cost clothing, we might have logos or things that are flashy, and we want to show that off. Doesn't mean it's necessarily bad to have expensive clothes, but so it is dealing with dressing too much, but there's also a sense in which that idea of shamefacedness assumes that the nakedness has already been covered. And I want to suggest we could all agree that if somebody was naked or they haven't fully covered their nakedness, that is not professing godliness. I think we would all agree with that. If they are not fully, properly clothed, they're not professing godliness. And secondly, that concept of shamefacedness speaks to the concept of covering what is shameful. And we'll talk about that a little bit in just a moment. But it's not about overdressing versus underdressing, but both are under consideration here. When he talks about proper clothing with modesty, he's talking about making sure that you're not being ostentatious, but also that you've covered appropriately what needs to be covered. That all of those are under consideration here. Modesty assumes that the nakedness has already been appropriately covered. And we'll talk a little bit more in just a second about why this doesn't talk about underdressing in the New Testament. Another argument that may be made in regard to this is that it's merely a matter of the heart. In fact, just this past week, I saw a woman on Facebook. She's a preacher's wife. I'm not going to mention her name, but some preacher's wife, and she posted a meme that was intended to be pejorative in terms of the very things that we're talking about. And she said in this post that you're going to be hearing sermons that they're going to open up the Bible and they're going to start saying that this is the line and this is what you need to do. But it's all just a matter of the heart. And I start going through the comment section and there's a comment that says, where the heart is right, there may be no problem. And I want to suggest that that's a lie. That is not true. The biggest problem with folks who assert this idea is they're making us out to be the standard. We determine what is right. So long as our heart is right, then whatever we decide is appropriate. That has never been what the Bible has been about. In fact, sincerity alone has never been the sole factor for judging our faithfulness to God. In Joshua chapter 24 and verse 14, and this is one among many places we could look at, but in Joshua chapter 24 and verse 14, Joshua is called upon or calling upon the Israelites to serve God with integrity or sincerity and truth. Do you need sincerity? Absolutely, we need sincerity. But that's not at the expense of truth. We find examples, particularly in the Old Testament, I believe 1 Kings chapter 13 is one such example, where you have a young prophet who is very sincere in what he believes, but he believes a lie, and because of that, he's destroyed by God because he disobeyed the word of God. He was sincere, but he was also wrong in his sincerity. And so we need sincerity in our heart to be right, but our heart has to be guided by truth if it's going to be truly right in the sight of God. And so Yes, the heart is important, and we'll come back to that later on, but it's not the sole consideration. And then, some might point out that these are the only two passages in the New Testament that deal with our attire, and they may be right with that. There are some other discussions, but they're not really in the same vein as what we're talking about in these two passages. And so they suggest there's no guidelines, there's no lines, and we can't bind anything, and that's not true either. If you back up to 1 Peter 3 and verse 5, we saw verses 3 and 4 just a minute ago. But in verse 5, he says, in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being subject to their own husbands. What he's saying is, what I'm telling you right here is the same standard that God has always had. And in former times, godly women used to adorn themselves in this way, following the instructions that God had given them. And so what Peter is saying there is, I'm reminding you of some of these principles with the expectation that you already know what God has already said about this, about covering our nakedness in the Old Testament. They don't need to deal with them again in the New Testament because they assume that we already know what God has already revealed about them. You know, one of the arguments that we make about the Bible that to prove that it comes from God is its brevity. Because if man wrote the Bible, every single time we'd be giving every single caveat we could ever think for every little principle that we put in there. We'd have to go in there in 1 Peter 3 when we're trying to talk about this, and we say, but I don't mean this, and I don't mean this, but I especially mean this, and I especially mean this. But God just sets that principle there, expecting that you already have an understanding of everything else that he's already said on the subject, so that you can put it all together to have a complete understanding of what God desires for that given topic. And so, there are guidelines in the Old Testament for how we should properly clothe ourselves. And to illustrate, you know, our point here, we don't find a place in the New Testament that says don't take the Lord's name in vain. Is there anybody that's going to stand up and say, well, let's take the Lord's name in vain then? We understand it's wrong, even though it's not specifically stated in the New Testament. So even though these principles of covering ourselves is not explicitly repeated in the New Testament, the concepts like we find in 1 Peter 3 and 1 Timothy 2 point us back to what the Old Testament tells us about covering ourselves appropriately. And so we ought to go back and look at what the Old Testament says, and it is just as authoritative as what Peter and Paul wrote to us in the New Testament. And so let's begin to apply some of these ideas. I want to begin with an understanding of nakedness in general, what God defines as nakedness, and then we'll look at how we properly clothe that. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 25, we find the first mention, well, maybe not the first mention of it, but we find a mention of it. The man and his wife were both naked, and they were not ashamed. That is a part of creation, that they had no clothing, and they were not ashamed. That's also speaking to the marriage covenant that they had joined together in. There was no shame in their nakedness as they were together. And then the next chapter goes on. In chapter 3, we find the sin taking place, and all of a sudden, shame enters the picture. Beginning in verse 7, the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made for themselves loin coverings. They recognize, in chapter 2, verse 25, there may not have even been an understanding that they were naked. This is just the way God created them. And they were not ashamed because there was nothing to be ashamed about. But now that sin has entered the picture, they realize their nakedness, and so they make effort to cover themselves. And then in verse 8, they hear God, the sound of Yahweh God walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of Yahweh God in the midst of the trees of the garden. And Yahweh God called to the man and said to him, Yahweh, or where are you? And he said, I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself. First of all, they made coverings for themselves. And it specifically says loin coverings. And I'm not going to press that because I hope you understand what we're talking about there. I don't want to emphasize this any further than appropriateness will demand. But they made loin coverings for themselves. And I think we would all agree that that's rather insufficient. And so notice what Adam says when he speaks to God. I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. Didn't they cover themselves? They'd cover themselves. They'd made clothing coverings for themselves, but they still recognized themselves as being naked. So first of all, they were covered and yet still naked. Second, there was a sense of shame associated with the nakedness. And that's the principle that is carried throughout the rest of the Old Testament and even into the New Testament. There is and should be a sense of shame that is associated with our nakedness. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 26, we find instructions given to the priests that they are not to go up on by steps onto the altar so that their nakedness would not be exposed on it. Now, that doesn't use the term shame in there, but I think it is implied that to go up onto the steps in a manner that their nakedness would be exposed would be a shameful thing. I don't think we're being dishonest when we infer that from the text. And then we look in Isaiah chapter 47, verses 1 through 3. Isaiah chapter 47, verses 1 through 3. And this is a text where we find judgment language, where this nation is being judged by God, and judgment is going to come, and it's being described in certain ways. He says in verse 1, "Come now and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground without a throne, O daughters of Chaldeans. For you shall no longer be called tender and delicate. Take the millstone and grind flour, uncover your veil, strip off the skirt, uncover the leg, cross the rivers. Your nakedness will be uncovered, your shame also will be seen, and I will take vengeance and will not spare a man." Now, what Isaiah is not doing here is not saying, let me define what nakedness is. Now, when you strip off the skirt, then you're naked. That's not what he's trying to do here. But what he is doing is saying that they are going to be put to shame for their wickedness, and that shame is just as if they are uncovered. Their nakedness has been exposed. That is metaphorically spoken there in verse 3. Your nakedness will be uncovered, but your shame also will be seen. So nakedness and shame is connected together there. We also find this in Revelation 3, in verse 18. This principle is found even in the New Testament, and this is written to the seven churches of Asia, particularly in this instance, the church in Laodicea. Revelation 3, in verse 18, where John, or Jesus, either one, advised that you buy from me gold refined by fire so that you may become rich, and white garments so that you may clothe yourself, and that the shame of your nakedness will not be manifested. Again, nakedness is connected with shame. And so we go back to the garden in Genesis chapter 3, where Adam and Eve, they had covered themselves, and yet they still felt shame because of their nakedness, and so they hid from God. And then in verse 21, God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife, and he clothed them. He made appropriate coverings for them. And so, this idea is a tunic. Some of your versions will say it is a tunic. Mine says a garment. But that word, I don't know the Hebrew word that it comes from, but it's generally thought of as being as covering from the neck to the knees. And if that is the case, and I think the studies of that word would suggest that it is, God is setting a standard. They were naked, and they had covered themselves, but that was insufficient. And so God gives them a suitable covering, and God is going to ensure that they are covered in a manner that is suitable. And if it does cover from the neck to the knees, that should tell us something about what God had made for them. We also find in Exodus 28 and verse 40, another place where the priests are under discussion here. Exodus 8 and verse 40, or 28 and verse 40, where God is talking about the garments that the priests are to put on here. He says, For Aaron's sons you shall make tunics, the same word that God made for Adam and Eve there in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 21. This tunic was made for the priests, and you shall make sashes for them, and you shall make caps for them for glory and for beauty. We're going to come back to the priests in just a moment, but we do find that God has discussed nakedness, and he has defined nakedness and the purpose of clothing, which first and foremost is to cover our nakedness. That's why God created those tunics for them. There's also that sense in which blood had to be shed to atone for their sin and such like that. But also God is covering them in a literal and spiritual sense. A literal sense to cover their nakedness, but in a spiritual sense, blood is shed in order to cover them for their sin. First and foremost, we want to recognize our purpose for getting dressed in the morning is to cover our nakedness. Because we all have those dreams, or we all have those ideas in our mind of what would happen if we just happened to be out in the midst of public and we had no clothes on. And we just, think about how shameful that would be and how embarrassing of a time that would be. We get dressed in the morning to cover our nakedness, first and foremost. And God defined nakedness and what it is that needs to appropriately be covered if we are going to please him. And so, when it comes to covering our nakedness, I do want to remind us that we can be covered and still naked. You go to the beach and you find many examples of that, of people who are covered, and many think sufficiently, and yet they are naked in the eyes of God. But we find throughout the Bible that God demands that people cover their nakedness. In Genesis chapter 9 and verse 23, and this is not so much a command, but we find Noah, the story of Noah where he had got drunk and then he became uncovered in his tent. And one of his sons, Ham, saw him and goes and tells his brother. But Shem and Japheth, they take a garment, lay it on their shoulder, and walk backwards into the room to lay it over their father so that they don't see his nakedness, but that they could cover his nakedness. What I think is implied there is that, and it's not just implied, when you see the curse that's laid on by Noah in the following verses, what we find in this story is Noah's nakedness being exposed was shameful. Well, at least in his own tent, not necessarily, but once his son comes in to look upon it, that was shameful for his son to look upon. And so that's why Shem and Japheth go with such care to look away to cover their father's nakedness so that he cannot no longer be exposed. That was appropriate in that situation, to cover what was uncovered. And we also find in Isaiah 58 and verse 7, another place where we find an indication of a God's desire for us to cover what is naked. He says in Isaiah 58 and verse 7, Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry and to bring afflicted into the house? When you see the naked, you cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? That's a principle that you're going to find throughout the Bible, that God talks about covering those who are naked. That's in Matthew 25. I was naked and you clothed me. God expects that we cover our nakedness, that we clothe ourselves in an effort to cover our nakedness. And again, that's the first consideration when it comes to clothing. Suppose that you're in your room and you're completely uncovered, and then all of a sudden the door bursts open and somebody walks in the room. What's your first thought? Now, what's some appropriate clothing? That's not your first thought, right? Your first thought is, I'm going to hide behind something. I'm going to grab the curtain. I'm going to grab a towel, a bed sheet, something so that I can cover myself. And then once that has taken place, now we can just consider what is appropriate, right? And so God has given instructions for how we can appropriately cover our nakedness. We saw there in Exodus chapter 28 and verse 40 that these tunics were to be made. In verse 42, we get a little bit more detail about these. And he says in verse 42, you shall make for them linen undergarments to cover their bare flesh, and they shall reach from the loins even to the thighs. And the way that that's worded, I think it suggests that we think that it needs to cover the loins and then it reached to the thigh. And as long as it reaches to the thigh, it's sufficiently covered. What? You understand what's going on here. That's not very much. And so when he says reach from the loins even to the thighs, the idea there is even the thighs are covered. The thighs themselves are to be covered as well. And so it's not just as long as I cover to the thigh, but even the thigh is covered. When Jesus says, lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the age, does he mean that I'm with you, but then once the end of the age comes, I'm no longer, no more? We see this idea of even unto being inclusive of both the loins and the thighs. And there's been a study done, and I don't have time to really go into all the details of that. But every time in the New Testament or the Old Testament where this idea of even unto includes body parts, it always fully encompasses both of them. And so when he says that these undergarments are to cover their bare flesh, they should reach from the loins even to the thighs, I think the implication there is that the thigh must be completely covered. Now this is the priests, right? These are the priests that we're talking about. These are the special garments that were made for the priests. Yes, but what God was giving instructions for is to cover their nakedness. And so he says, I want their loins, even to the thighs, to be covered so that their nakedness is covered. To uncover the thigh is to be considered to be naked. And so God has defined the areas that need to be covered, the thigh being one of them. We find in Ezekiel chapter 16 and verse 7, Ezekiel chapter 13, or 16 rather, in verse 7. I'm going a little too far in my Old Testament here. In Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 7, it reads here, I made you numerous like plants of the field. Then you grew up and became tall and came into the age of fine ornaments. Your breasts were formed and your hair had grown. You were naked and bare. I think we can infer that God wants the thigh to be covered. We saw there. But he also wants the breasts to be covered. And I want to suggest here that it's not just women. If women walked outside with no shirt on, then all of a sudden they might get arrested for indecent exposure. But a guy does that and nobody says anything about it. It's still nakedness. It's still exposure of our nakedness. There is no distinction between man or woman considered here. And so it's not appropriate for the woman, and it's also not appropriate for the men. And I want to say that when we talk about the thighs needing to be covered, the breasts need to be covered, the problem comes when we start asking the question, how much needs to be covered? And my first question is, are we asking that out of a heart of submission, that I want to ensure that I'm appropriately covering everything that God desires to be covered, or am I trying to get away with as little as possible? And if you're trying to get away with as little as possible, that's a heart problem. And we talked about it's a matter of the heart. That is a heart problem. And that is not something that's going to be pleasing to God. Then secondly, do we understand why God wants these things to be covered? Because it's holy to ensure that our nakedness is covered. That's why the priests had to ensure that their nakedness was covered, because if they didn't, God would strike them dead as they entered into the service. Because they're unholy, because their nakedness is exposed. Now, we're not serving as priests in the same way as they are, but we are a royal priesthood. And as we serve God, we want to make sure that we are holy in doing so and that we've fully covered ourselves and covered our nakedness. We are not treating our bodies as holy when we fail to adequately cover them. You think about the idea of holy. It's set apart as opposed to common or profane. When we just open it up and we let everybody else see what's there, that is treating it as something that's profane, that's common. And we might think the thighs, I've heard a story several years ago of a school dress code, and this girl had shorts on that were considered too short, and the teacher had sent her to go and deal with that. And one of the boys mockingly said, "Oh, I'm so glad that you're doing that, because that was totally distracting." And I know that we might think, why would God want the whole body to be covered? Well, he has his reasons, and he is not obligated to share all the reasoning behind us. But I think I know one reason why God says those things must be covered. Because when we don't, it draws attention to the more private areas. And ladies, specifically, if you knew that other people were looking at areas that are very private, you'd probably be appalled. And yet sometimes the way that we dress when they are not as long as they should be, or they're uncovered or partially uncovered, we're drawing attentions in those very areas that God says need to be covered because they have more honor. And so we don't want to dress ourselves, uncovering our nakedness, to draw attention to areas that are not for the eyes of other people. And so God had reasons for why he suggested that we cover these things. And then also we want to ensure that we remain covered despite what we do throughout the day. If you're wearing a dress, it may be of an appropriate length, but when you're sitting down, does it fully cover? Same thing with guys. You may have shorts that are long enough, but then you sit up and they ride up and half your thigh is showing. That's uncovering our nakedness. And then ladies, when we come up top, we may be covered, but if there, you know, we call it cleavage, that's not fully covering. That's not fully covering our nakedness. Other people should not be able to see there. We talked about earlier, the neck to the knees was covered, and everything in between. And so that is to properly cover our nakedness. That's what we need to be covering if we are appropriately covered. And that, again, continues with what we're doing throughout the day. A dress may be appropriate if all you're doing is walking around and standing. But if you're playing volleyball, that's probably not the best thing to be wearing, right? It does fit in terms of circumstances. What may be appropriate for one circumstance is not necessarily appropriate in another circumstance. And then I also want to add, we don't want to cover things that essentially expose them. And in case you're not really picking up what I'm putting down, those leggings that people wear, and those really tight clothes that people wear, it really leaves very little to the imagination. That is not honoring God. And I know we might say, but I'm covered. Yeah, but no more than a coat of paint would. And none of us would say that it's okay to slather ourselves with a cone of paint and walk out the door. And yet we're dressing in ways that cover us in the very same way as a cone of paint would. You know, think about when we wrap presents to give to people. You know, sometimes we have them in boxes that obscure them. And we've all seen pictures of things that are wrapped, and you know exactly what it is, right? You know exactly what it is because it's wrapped, it's covered, but it doesn't hide anything. What's the point? What's the point? We don't want to cover ourselves in a way that's not hiding anything anyway. That's not holiness, and that's not honoring God in the way that we are dressing. And so we're not fully covering our nakedness if we're leaving so little to the imagination because of the tightness regarding it. But then also, we want to consider that covering our nakedness is required regardless of the situation that we find ourselves in. And so we're getting to the point of the year where it starts getting hot outside, and it doesn't matter how hot it is outside, the same standard still applies when it comes to covering our nakedness to ensure that we are properly covered. And nakedness is still nakedness when you're at the beach. And I think a lot of Christians would, when we're gathered together to worship, they think, oh yes, I want to dress appropriately, but it doesn't really matter when I go to the beach. Yes, it does. As we already talked about, you can go to the beach and you can see thousands and thousands of people that are naked. They're appropriately covered. They're naked. God says they're naked. They've uncovered their nakedness. It's shameful the way that they have failed to properly clothe themselves. Nakedness is still naked when you're getting married. I think it's utterly shameful when you find women who are very much modestly dressed, but then all of a sudden when they get married on their wedding day, it's thrown out the window and it doesn't matter. And then it's all shown off right there before everybody else. That is shameful and should not be. Or whether we're at a formal gathering where these formal gowns are being worn, it's still nakedness, and the occasion does not change that. And I want to suggest that what we've been talking about is a matter of holiness and trying to cover ourselves in a modest way because that is honoring in the sight of God. What we haven't talked about so much is one of the other arguments that's commonly used, and I didn't want to use this for a reason because I think our focus should be on this is about me and God and honoring God in the way that I dress myself. But there's a side issue that's there, and that is the kind of attention that it draws, particularly from other men when ladies don't dress appropriately. Now, I read an article this week. It's a guy named Jack Wilkie. I don't know much about him. But he wrote in his article, imagine if we made these kinds of exceptions for lust. Okay, guys, it's important that you don't lust unless you're at a wedding or a formal dance or the gym or a swimming area. Then the principles go out the window. Have at it. We'd be appalled, right? We'd say, wait a second, that's not right. And just as it would be wrong for the man to lust in all of those situations, and in any situation, it's wrong to be uncovered in any situation. And so we want to make sure that whatever, wherever we are, whatever we're doing, that we are appropriately covering our nakedness in a manner that pleases God. And again, this comes back to a matter of the heart. When we consider the heart in this, do we have a heart that desires to please God in the way that we dress? Colossians 3:17, are we seeking the authority of God in all that we do? Or are we trying to go our own way? I've seen articles being written on this a lot. And usually you go into the comment section on the internet and it's just a war. It's just a war where, some people are thinking, thank you, this is such a great reminder, I appreciate it. And then other people are like, well, then them, they just need to quit looking, and all these things. And then people get angry when all of these kinds of discussions are brought up. And my question is, are they angry because what's being said is untrue, or are they angry because what's being said conflicts with what they want to do? Too often it's the latter. They're not angry because God said they're misrepresenting what God said. They're angry because they don't want to do what God said. And that is a matter of the heart. And then to properly cover our nakedness, to fail to properly cover our nakedness, is to partake in something that's called licentiousness. Lewdness. And that's most certainly a matter of the heart. Jesus describes in Mark chapter 7 and verse 22. Mark chapter 7 and in verse 22. Jesus is talking about the heart and how all things proceed from the heart. He says here that from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, sexual immoralities, thefts, murders, adulteries, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. That sensuality or lewdness or licentiousness. When we fail to cover ourselves, we are dressing in a way that is lewd. And it is not appropriate. And then we want to ask ourselves, am I trying to push the boundaries? Or am I trying to respect the boundaries that God has set? Am I willing to submit myself entirely to the will of God? And I'm not going to push the button at all, but I'm going to respect the boundary that he's given. Or am I thinking of others as I'm dressing as well? Because the way I dress can have an impact on other people, both from an example standpoint, but also from the way that I am presenting myself. And so we want to ensure in all things that we are appropriately covering our nakedness and that we are covering it in the way that God has defined and not in the way that our society has defined. Now, quickly, as we close, I want to go to Titus chapter 2, verses 3 through 5, and I want to make an appeal from this passage. We find in Titus 2, beginning in verse 3, Paul is charging, within this chapter in general, he's charging the older men to take aside the younger men and to teach them. The older women, beginning in verse 3, likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips or enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may instruct the younger women in sensibility, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be slandered. What he's saying there is that the older generations need to teach the younger generations. And I think when he talks about being sensible and pure in verse 5, that would include the way that we dress. Now, I know of older godly women who take younger women aside and try and instruct them in these matters. And usually it's like, oh, well, you know, that's just, you know, the 1950s and the way they grew up, and they just trying to live in the past. I want to suggest from Titus chapter 2 here that this is not a suggestion that Paul is making. This is a responsibility that Christians have. The older women have a responsibility towards the younger women to teach them and to instruct them and to guide them in the way that they should go. And I want to say it should start at home. Fathers need to be talking to their children, especially their daughters, about how the way that they can dress can bring undue attention on them and how she can bring honor to herself as a godly woman as she professes godliness in the way that she clothes herself. Parents need to be teaching those things to their kids. But some people grow up and they're not raised by godly parents and their parents don't teach them things. Well, that's where the church can come in and to fill in those gaps. That's the older women taking aside the younger women and teaching them. And so we have a responsibility. And on the other side of that, if you're younger, you need to have a heart of submission to be willing to hear the wisdom from the older. In Proverbs 22 and verse 28, it's a very general principle, but I think it applies here. Proverbs 22 and verse 28, it says here, do not move the ancient boundary which your fathers have made. Now, I'm applying that to an ancient boundary that God has set regarding our nakedness and what he desires to be covered. Do not move it. Do not rail against it. Do not push it away. Have a heart of submission, because what these ladies are trying to instruct you in is not old 1950s customs. This is the word and the will of God. And if we want to be faithful, then we must do what God has given for us to do. And we must clothe ourselves in a way that professes godliness. And so the way that we clothe ourselves is an important consideration. And too many would clothe themselves and leave their nakedness exposed to their own shame. And that is not the way it should be for the child of God. I want to close by reading the second song that we sang just a moment ago, In Your Holy Sight. And it says, may I be beautiful in your eyes, righteous and clean within. May I be pleasing in your sight. May I be beautiful in your pure and holy sight. May I stand faithful before your word, steadfast and true to you. May I be upright in your sight. May I stand faithful before your true and constant word. May I be humble before your eyes. Yielding to all you say, may I be reverent in your sight. May I fall prostrate before your tender, loving heart. That's the kind of hearts that we need when we approach this kind of discussion. A heart that desires beauty according to God's standards, submission, reverence, faithfulness, by appropriately covering myself in the manner that God desires so that he may be glorified, so that I can profess godliness, so that others can see Christ living in me. And so I hope you take these considerations in mind as we deal with this subject that tends to be a rather touchy issue. But I think the Bible does say much about it, and it's very important that we ensure that we're doing and dressing ourselves in a way that honors God in all that we do. And so if we can encourage you or help you in any way, we'd be glad to do so. If you need to obey the gospel, if you need to put on Christ, have your sins washed away, raised up into new life, we'd be happy to help you to become a child of God. If you are a child of God and you need to walk faithfully with Him, or you need encouragement in walking with Him in faithfulness, then we're here to walk with you as a faithful community, to be able to walk together in righteousness and purity and holiness so that we can dwell with the Lord. God is calling all prodigals to come home, and if you need to respond to His invitation, we would bid you to come as we stand and sing together.